It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth. Our topic today is a family of adventurers who I think are going to blow your mind. The things they have done go beyond almost anyone we've talked about in our years on the show. Dario and Sabine Schroer have sailed all over the world, more than 100,000 nautical miles, in their quest to climb the seven highest peaks on the seven continents without using a motor. That's right, they're using the wind to move them from continent to continent, and then bikes and using their feet and using even pack rafts to climb each of the highest peaks, including Denali. They walked from Tidewater to Denali, used bicycles, and floated back down with pack rafts and continued their journey. And this last summer, they sailed through the Northwest Passage from Alaska all the way to the east coast of the United States, an amazing accomplishment for anyone in a sailboat. Let's add to it that they had their five children along, including a seven-month-old, and add to that that because of their consciousness of avoiding using fossil fuels, they did it without heat on the boat. So now you think that I'm going to introduce you to a Superman, but actually, Dario Schroer is a fascinating person who I heard give a talk here in Anchorage recently, and you're going to hear some of that recording, and a charming fellow who has a slight German accent from his Swiss roots. Thank you so much for being with us, Dario.
Yeah, hello. Yee-hoo! That's the way we say hello in the Alps, Hello. I'm very glad to talk to you.
So you began your adventure, you began your career, I guess, as a mountain guide in the Swiss Alps, and began to see the ice melting there, and at some point decided you were going to set off on this extraordinary trip around 2000. And I'm curious what your original goals were, and how your goals were created. How you decided to do this extraordinary voyage in the first place.
As you know, I'm a mountain guide, and so my office is there are the glaciers and the mountaintops and Swiss Alps in the first place. And as you know, the mountains, they are holding together by permafrost, by ice. And when I saw my office melting away, so the glaciers and also the impacts of the warming on permafrost, I came up with the idea, let's do something and start to act. And I think my really favorite climb in the Swiss Alps is a mountain called Piz Bernina. And there you have this wonderful ice ridge. It's like a stairway to heaven. And I climbed it so many times and I saw the changes. And it really touched my heart, when I saw the first rocks coming out, and then we were faced with more rock falls and accidents caused by that. So I was thinking, what can I do as a mountain guide? And I became really interested in geography and climatology, and I have had the privilege after my guide exam also to become and study the climate. And my wife and I were actually quite involved in youth and sports. That's an organization, a government organization in Switzerland, where we provide really great training in all outdoor sports. And there I really saw that when you like to inspire and motivate especially students and children and young people, then you have to come with a positive approach. And so from the first moment on, we decided that we don't like to go out and blame maybe stuff that don't work, that we really like to stress on the positive, on good solutions, on great innovations, and try also with the beauty of our planet to inspire as many people as possible to act for the future of this planet and to save the planet.
Well, and by doing it, by connecting people all over the world through sailing and having them see what you're accomplishing with your family and through music and everything else is such an inspiring and positive way to address this that I think it's wonderful. But tell me about your boat and how I know that you started this idea of sailing off all over the world, and you've lived the last 16 years on the boat. It's aluminum boat, and how did it, and you were sort of building it as you went along, which I thought was kind of extraordinary. How did you come to have this boat, and what sort of boat is it?
Yeah, I mean, we started in Switzerland, and in the first place, we hiked for 5 months to the tallest mountain. So from top to top in each of the 26 states, collecting the best practice examples for the environment and the climate. And then on this trip, we came up with the idea, let's go global. And we were just, when we were back in Geneva, we were just nonstop going, and we cycled to the ocean. And as you know, swimming over the ocean is probably not a good idea, kind of far. And so a climbing customer of mine, he was really generous and gave me a loan so that I was able to buy a hull, one mast and 3 sails. So we have had only a handheld GPS to cross the first ocean, that was the Atlantic. And the deal was that we have to outfit the boat during the expedition. And when the expedition is over, that we have to sell the boat and give him the money back. Now, saying that, it was just last year when he retired and has to pay back the money. And we were kind of in a position where I have had a really big accident, nearly lost my leg. And
but not from mountain climbing, but really from playing soccer, right?
Yeah, yeah.
That's crazy.
In San Diego. Yeah, and so we were kind of in a position where we nearly lost our home. So that was really tough for our children. And we still have this GoFundMe website going where we try now to get funds together that we can pay him out, that this boat actually can go around the globe many times more to inspire especially young people.
Yeah.
For the future.
Yeah. We'll put a link to that GoFundMe site as well as a link to your top-to-top site on our site at outdoorexplorer.org so listeners can find that. I'm talking to Dario Schwarer today, who's with his family, has sailed around the world and actually has sailed multiple times around the world and is in the process of sailing all the way around North and South America, something no one's ever done before under sail. Dario, you made the commitment to avoid using fuel, obviously because your main concern is climate change, and you've used very little fuel, and as part of that, I understand you're avoiding using heat in the cabin, which seems like it would be really unpleasant, especially when you're in the Arctic. Tell me about that decision, what that's really like with your family.
So the reason why we cannot heat the boat is actually a practical thing. We have an aluminium hull, and so when we would heat too much, you know, we would have so much condensation, it would just be terrible humid
right
inside the boat. And so when we were overwintering in Alaska and Cordova to attempt in Denali, we have had a small diesel heater on the boat. But we found out that we couldn't hardly use it because of this condensation problem. And while we are in Cordova, we tried to insulate the boat a little bit from inside, but it was kind of difficult. What worked much better was that we just adapted to the temperatures. And I mean the Inuits, they were also living in igloos in the olden days. So it's actually true, you know, when you have time to adapt to certain temperatures, your body is really adapting. And for us, we found out also that we just have to put more layers, and that worked also. So I think we found out it's actually amazing how our bodies are made and how we can adapt to temperatures.
Well, we're going to hear some of Dario speaking. He gave a presentation here in Anchorage in December, and talked about the voyage that he's made, and which, as you've heard, has covered much of the world and gone this way and that way across the continents. And then we're going to come back with some more questions later. So stick with us on Outdoor Explorer.
So thank you very much. Alaska really became our home and the favorite place to be. And that's why I was accepting to come here to talk to you, to give me another opportunity to be in Cordova, where we hope to settle once after our expedition. So we actually started in the year 2000, and it was just Sabine and me, and we have done now 100,000 nautical miles, and we came up with the idea to do a world record in going to the highest summit in each of the seven continents, not using a motor, so just sailing there, cycling, and climbing, with the idea once to collect the positive projects, solutions, technology, and also the beauty of our planet to inspire students along the way to act and save our planet. Now, my office here was melting in the late 90s, the glaciers and the mountaintops, and that was actually my motivation to start the expedition. In the first place, we were hiking through whole Switzerland. There are 26 states, and we've hiked to the tops of these 26 states, collecting good examples. The biggest problem we have had probably in Lucerne, when we needed new socks from all the walking, and I remember the socks were on the second floor, and we have had an argument with the staff till we were able to use the fire stairs to get to the socks because there were only elevators. So we did everything without motor. We were roped together for about 3 months. And I tell you, when you have a problem with your wife or husband, come to Switzerland, buy a rope, and go climbing on glaciers. I was really the best husband to my wife to make sure that she pulls me out of crevasses and vice versa. So that was really important for us just to have this trust. So we found already in 2000 great examples how we can do better and not pollute the planet, and that we brought into schools. Now, when we have been back in Geneva, United Nations Environment Program endorsed our expedition, and we continued nonstop. And we like to go global. But our planet is so big, we thought, okay, we need, you know, milestones where we go. And we said, okay, let's do this world record and try once to do something, a big achievement in harmony with nature, to go to the seven summits without using a motor, to connect really all climates. As you know, the climate is not only changing from Africa to Antarctica, the climate is also changing from Anchorage to the top of Denali. And so that's why that was actually our motivation to go from top to top, to find the top practice examples to save the planet. So a climbing customer of mine gave me a loan to buy just a hull, one mast and three sails, so that we didn't have to swim over the Atlantic. And we have had only a handheld GPS to cross the ocean. So there was nothing in the boat, and the deal was that we have to outfit the boat during the expedition, when the expedition is over, that we have to sell the boat and give him the money back. And so we didn't have had a fridge for the first 7 years. We didn't have had an autopilot for the first 6 years. So you can imagine when you sail towards Antarctica, 3 weeks, 24 hours, and you're two people, you can helm for about 45 minutes, and then you now knock your wife out, and then she helms. So it was kind of not so easy. The first problem we have had on the Atlantic was when all the shrouds were collapsing, and that we were so scared that we were stuck on the ocean. And the solution was then praying. And finally, we came up with the idea, let's use our ropes, climbing ropes, to support the mast. And with a little bit of sail, we continued. And we're so happy to see the first dolphins showing that land is coming soon. We have had a budget of about $10,000 when we started. And so we had always to work on the way. So as a mountain guide, that was great when there were mountains, and Sabine is a nurse, when there were hospitals. But in Barbados, they didn't accept her license and there are no mountains. So we were ending up cleaning dishes in a lobster restaurant from an Australian. And she became actually a chef in a week because we were always in time, you know. But we never would have come so far. Now living 16 years outdoors with not the help of the people along the way. That's one example from the Galapagos. We have been in schools for 3.5 months. When we left, people came along and they said, we have a present for you. We have done so many activities with our children. And they filled our boat with vegetables and fruits. And after a while, I said, hey, now you have to stop, otherwise my boat will sink. Now, what really is sad on an expedition, now also with the 5 children born on the way, is you have always to say goodbye to friends. And that's Hans, we rescued out of a fishing net in the Galapagos, was on board for 3.5 months. The first week we couldn't access the boat, so we have to climb over the anchor chain, because Hans said, that's my boat, to access the boat. And you can imagine how hard it was for Hans and for me and for Sabine to sail off towards Antarctica. And Hans was swimming behind the boat for about 6 hours till we left Hans in the dark. Yeah. So here we also recognize then what the hardship with sea level rising. These Kuna Indians here, they have a zero carbon footprint. But already on 60 islands, they struggle and have to leave the island. They have to go on islands that are still above sea level. They have to squeeze in. And there we started really doing campaigns, especially to provide them with school materials. These people on these islands, they're really smart, you know, in these remote places. And I think we can learn quite a lot of, you know, we think we have a PhD or whatever, and we are smarter, but we can really learn a lot. So the approach we have is always to go there, to learn, to listen, and understand in the first place. And like that, we can break the ice. And then Sabine is, as a nurse, she tries to help out. We see now in the last decade that disease really spread out with the warming we face. And what's really bad is the sea level rise caused that the groundwater gets more brackish and salty. And here we came up with New Zealand Aid with a great program to put solar panels hooked on a pump. And so you can process out of seawater drinking water, and the local fishermen don't have to sell their fish rights to big countries to get enough money and fuel for the generators. Now, we were pleased to have volunteers on board. In the 16 years, we have had volunteers from 48 nations helping in our programs. We have seen now more than 100,000 students in more than 100 countries from university level. So I became also a climatologist. And here is more Sabine in charge with younger students. We have a drawing contest where we try to get prizes together. And very important is that we try to connect the students to nature. You cannot be friend with nature when you have no relationship. That's like when you have a wife or husband, when you don't touch your husband or wife, that's something wrong. With nature, it's the same. So we really encourage outdoor sports and how they can give something back to nature. So we go in schools, it's free for them, but they can have to come out with us and clean up or do a service for the environment. Now let's go back to the expedition. Here in Easter Island, we were twice. Once we anchored, there were storm clouds coming, and we thought, okay, actually we should go in the back of the island to get shelter, but we have had the commitment in the school. So when we came back to the boat, this huge tsunami wave approached, and that's half-inch steel chain collapsed. And I think that shows that nature is always stronger than we are, and we learned that we really have to respect nature when we like to survive on the expedition. When we anchor, we normally take our bicycles out. That's our sleeping room. You see all the wooden work we did inside the boat. and then we cycle to the schools, to the next mountain. Sabine was here already in her 6 month pregnancy. That's on Aconcagua. And she cycled from Valdivia, you know, up to Santiago, huh? And back. Now, what was really different to the lifestyle we have had back in Switzerland, where when you have a house, you have three pairs of skis and so on, five ice axes, you really have to reduce to the minimum when you have to put everything on a bike, especially when with a heavy backpack, you never make it to the top. And so getting rid of this ballast, you know, we found out is also very good for your soul. And when you have five cars at home, you can only drive one car. So we found out less is really more and makes you happier. Now in the Andes, the glaciers are melting there. This community here, the students get 40% don't get 20 years old because the little water left because the glacier is gone is so contaminated. And here I like to stress that simple technology works best. So with a water bottle container, you can purify the water with the sun radiation, the UV, that you have afterwards just clean water and healthy water and no diarrhea anymore. Let's go once to Antarctica. So we tried to get into this Bellingshausen Bay and then ski about 600 miles to Mount Vinson and then we kite coming out. On the way, we volunteered to get ice samples. As you know, like that you can have a better picture about the climate many years ago. And as a climatologist, I have to admit that the climate was always changing. So you can go with ice cores about back 400,000 years. But what we see now, it's really strange and we have never seen that, the speed of warming. And you know, for these people I showed you before, it doesn't matter if it's natural or human-made, you know. It's happening and I think we have come together, have a good dialogue and need to problem solve and see how we go ahead together. Now in this Bellingshausen Bay, that was an ice shelf about 18 years ago. That's where we would able to sail into here. And so that's about 200 miles to the coast. And the inland glacier, they can just now float into the ocean. And you know, before it was like a dam. And that's the reason why we'll face quite a bit of sea level rising. So for us here in a training, you can imagine how much time you need to cross that. So that's actually the only mountain we couldn't complete so far, Mount Vinson, where we tried 2004. And what we go next now. Now on the way back, we have had the biggest disaster when we hit a floating container that was washed overboard by a big cargo. And I didn't know that 10,000 containers get lost on average per year. So it destroyed our rudder. We couldn't steer the boat anymore, but luckily we were a sailboat and we had to drag lines on the side. But the wave impact over these 3 weeks till we made landfall was so terrible that in the first place, all the kitchen board, the wooden work we did inside the boat collapsed. And maybe you have been in a storm once and you hear the boat working. It's just terrible. And then it started to crack the hull. So we poured silicone in our socks to avoid that too much water comes into the cracks. And we were just praying and that helped. So we saw land and you can, I think I was the happiest person ever when I saw land after 3 weeks struggling for life. And again, people in Patagonia, in the Valdivia helped us out welding the boat together, but the boat was just totally damaged. And my climbing customer told me in the first place, don't ask me for more. And everybody in Switzerland said, your wife is pregnant, you have a broken boat, now you have to come home. But we couldn't because my wife and I, we promised each other that we don't give up till we try 20 times. And so Skype was just new and we approached over 1 year where we are stuck there, universities and companies to test their renewable technologies on the boat. And now the boat is fully powered by wind and solar energy.
It It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Wolforth, and we are learning about Dario Schwerer with his top-to-top expedition around the world, climbing the world's seven highest peaks, sailing, using no motors, an amazing story about him and his family. You can learn more at outdoorexplorer.org and get links to him. So Dario and his family sailed through the Northwest Passage over the summer, in the fall, and on the way, they stopped off in Nome and met Davis Hovey of KNOM. And right now, we're going to hear a little bit about that visit with this report from Davis Hovey.
The Pachamama Band, also known to a few as the Schwerer Family Singers, are all members of one Swiss family that has been living at sea for the past 16 years. They've been sailing around the world in a boat called Pachamama, educating people about climate change and re-strengthening humanity's relationship with nature.
It's about respect to nature, about giving back also to others, you know, and just to care about this planet like it's your own mother.
As part of an organization the Schwerer family started called Top to Top, their goal was to reach the tops of the seven tallest mountains on each of the seven continents without using motor transportation of any kind. Top to Top also took on volunteers when possible to help crew the boat, collect data on climate change, and assist with the kids' education. Currently, there are three volunteers living on board with the Schwerers. Dario Schwerer, the father of five, says the plan was to take 4 years to complete this record feat. But the plan has changed slightly since he and his wife first started in the year 2000.
So our goal now is to go to the Northwest Passage to Greenland and do more or less a figure eight. So a first sailboat doing a figure eight around the two Americas. And on that figure eight, we will also sail then south to Antarctica and hopefully can do the mountain we tried in 2004 then.
In 2004, Dario and his family attempted to reach Mount Vinson, the tallest mountain in Antarctica, but their self-built vessel was so damaged by the icy waters that they couldn't continue. The Schwerers have faced a variety of challenges during their 16-year-long sea voyage, including a lack of funding. One of the sponsors for Top to Top for 8 years was SGS, an international inspection and certification company. But when a new CEO took over SGS, Dario says their educational projects' resources suffered.
Unfortunately, we lost SGS, and that's kind of hard because we have had these two, so we are now running on half of our budget.
Currently, the rest of Top to Top's budget comes from individuals' donations and from their other sponsor, Victorinox. Victorinox manufactures apparel and travel gear, but they are more commonly known for making genuine Swiss Army knives. Being of Swiss heritage, the Schwerer family brought many Swiss Army knives with them to serve different practical purposes on board, and maybe a not-so-practical one. Sabine Schwerer, a former nurse and now full-time mother, used a Swiss Army knife during each of her children's births.
They will get that knife we cut the umbilical cord. So we have five knives, and we will give them to them when they are 20.
Five knives for five children. The oldest is Selena, then Andri, Noi, Allegra, and the newborn Mia, who can be heard crying in the background. All of them were born at sea and have spent their entire lives on this floating home. So when the children were asked how they felt about frequently moving from place to place, they said,
"Good. Good.
It's nice.
It's cool. Yeah.
You have to say bye to a lot."
Mm-hmm. Yes.
It's sad.
But
it's
you can
sad.
Say hi too.
And the Schwerer family has seen a lot, from Mount Everest to the Shanghai World Expo facilities and small villages around the world where they have taught more than 80,000 children about climate change. After seeing so many beautiful places, Dario still recalls one of his favorite sights, an ice ridge from the Pisbernina Mountain in his homeland.
Wonderful ice ridge going to the top. It's like stairway to heaven out of ice. It's really beautiful. It's called Biancograd. That means the white ridge, let's say, translated in English.
Originally a Swiss mountain guide, Dario grew up in a remote village of 55 people located in a part of the Swiss mountains. When he saw climate change negatively affecting his workplace, Dario studied at a Swiss university to become a climatologist and made a plan to educate others about climate change. That's why Dario is encouraging and educating children all over the world, including his own.
Nature teaches them every day something. And I mean, just the other day when we sailed in here and they saw the Salmon Creek here, they catched more than 11 fish, you know, and they have had the blasts. Andriy, the 9-year-old, taking the fish in. Noah, the 6-year-old, killing them, and Allegra, the 5-year-old, and Selena, the 11-year-old, cleaning them out. So they came back at 10 o'clock at night. We didn't know where they went. Big smiles, you know, with all that salmon.
The Top to Top organization's desire and Dario's wish is that after this pole-to-pole expedition, then a younger generation will continue sailing for the Schwerers.
Also without us, that young people take over, that Pachamama, that's the name of the boat that stands for Mother Earth, goes around the planet many, many times more, inspiring young people, and that we hopefully get settled once then.
Having visited cities and towns all over the world, the Schwerers are unsure as to where they would like to make port permanently, but they say Alaska is towards the top of their list. For now, the family will stay in Nome for approximately a week and then sail to Barrow to determine if they can continue up the Northwest Passage. Reporting in Nome, I'm Davis Hovey.
You're listening to Outdoor Explorer on Alaska Public Media. Find the show anytime as a free podcast in the iTunes Store or connect with us online at alaskapublic.org.
It's Outdoor Explorer. I'm Charles Walforth. We were just hearing from that report that was produced at KNOM as my guest, Dario Schwerer, was getting ready to go through the Northwest Passage, which he did. He sailed from west to east through the Northwest Passage, ended up on the East Coast, and is now in, as I'm talking to him, and this is pre-recorded, in Mystic, Connecticut, where he's been speaking to schools and spreading the word about his climate change message. Quite an extraordinary voyage through the Northwest Passage with sail. He's traveling, avoiding using motors as much as possible, and done it with his family of 5 children and his wife and volunteers on board as well on the sailboat. They started in from Switzerland and have been climbing all the mountains, as you heard. And part of your challenge, I guess, Dario, has been technological. You mentioned during your talk that you had constructed a sort of bumper on the bow of the sailboat to ward off icebergs as you went through the Northwest Passage, using junk you found at the Nome dump. And I thought that was ingenious. But you're also working on some high-tech ideas to conserve energy and allow people to have electricity on board. Tell us about that.
Yeah, that's right. This year we became actually the first boat ever doing the Northwest Passage, going through Fern-Hakla Strait into Fox Basin and then into Hudson Strait. And that demonstrates how much ice was gone this summer. The reason why we went through there was actually that we have encountered quite a lot of headwinds in Lancaster Sound, so we went and south. And I was thinking we never can make it through there because it was always ice blocked. And I did it more because I didn't like to wait for days on anchorage. And when we were then at Fern-Hakla, we have had a chance, but it was kind of difficult, but we made it through. And there I came up with the idea, wouldn't this be really great, you know, when we would have, instead of this little diesel engine, we only use to park the boat in a harbor or going into anchorages, when you would have just an electric motor. And with the technology we have nowadays, with these wonderful batteries, maybe you heard about the Tesla cars, you know, they have a range now of about 300 miles. So with this kind of battery pack, you know, and electric motor they do now, you can easily recuperate enough power into your battery that you have hours to drive and park your boat in your marina or harbor, or go to an anchorage. And what I like and hope what happens next in the next 2 or 3 months, that somebody can gave me a contact to Elon Musk from Tesla, and I'd like to have a chat with him if he may would sponsor us such a battery pack and maybe an electric motor, so that we can prove that we can even go to the Northwest Passage on the extreme conditions, electric. And my hope is that out of that, we have really a revolution in the sailing world, that many boaters go electric and find out that's actually really poor freedom and just the independence, not having to think about where's the next gas station,
right,
and deal with motor problems and stuff like that, you know. I think that will really change the boating world quite a bit. And it will be just perfect for our oceans, because what we learned, you know, from researchers we met in the Arctic and also in other oceans, that noise pollution is really a really big problem.
Right, it made it so quiet,
many,
yeah.
Many mammals in the ocean, like whales, dolphins, and so on. So when you go electric, I think that would be, they would be so happy, all these whales, you know.
They will. So you're an inventor. You like to make things, and you sort of built your boat as you went and talked about in your lecture about some of the difficulties you ran into when your mast was in danger of falling down and you had to use climbing ropes to fix it and these other things. And all that, I think, will sound very familiar to Alaskans, because I think Alaskans do like to be a bit self-reliant and to make things. And from the sound of it, you kind of fit in here. You really liked being in Cordova, and you've thought about coming back here to settle at some point. Tell me why you liked Alaska so much.
You know, when you have been outdoors for 16 years, you really become, I think, part of nature. And, I mean, Alaska, for me, that's pure nature. I mean, especially Cordova, that's for my family, that's paradise on the globe. It's not only, you know, the landscape, the glaciers, the mountains, and sea otters swimming in the harbor. It's also the people in Cordova. They're just outstanding. You know, they're so poor, you know, I mean, natural way of life, and how they care about the environment. And the fishing families, as an example, you know, everybody's involved in when they go for salmon in the Cook River Delta. And I remember when we were overwintering there, you know, that people like Belle Nicholson, as an example, she does every day, every second day, I think, this morning musing at the school. And so we have many friends there, and I think we got often the question, where's the best place on the planet? And a lot of people think about landscape or the Eiffel Tower or the Matterhorn in Switzerland. That's the things, they are important. But what really counts, I think, is friendship and the heart of people. And yeah, we have now so many friends in Cordova, and they have so big hearts, and they're just outstanding, that we miss Cordova quite a bit.
Well, I love that part of your message, as you were talking about the desire to change people one person at a time through kindness and personal connections, and that rather than just talk about technology, you're talking about that as being the solution to climate change.
Yeah, I believe, you know, climate change has actually also a good part. And the good part of climate change is that it's really now a global phenomenon and a challenge for everybody on this planet. And what I have seen when we were invited in Seoul, for example, to the climate conference in Durban, South Africa, how many people from all over the globe came together and tried to solve this challenge. And that brings really people together, a problem solvers, working together. And like that, I think it helps also to build bridges, and finally brings also peace on Earth. So I think that's the good part. And for me, what I don't like to see is, you know, this divide of deniers and people they are pro climate change. I really like to see more relationships between these two extremes, and really that we can build bridges. My solution for that is really that with technology now, with internet and Skype, that we can connect all the schools we have visited in more than 100 countries, and that students can exchange their challenges with global warming in their environment. And I'm pretty sure this network, based on solidarity and understanding, will be the best tool to solve global challenges.
Yes.
And in that way, you know, when you look at it from this perspective, it is a challenge, and I think it's really the biggest challenge we face in our time. But on the other side, it has also a positive side and a chance that all the people on this planet come together to solve a major problem.
Yes, yes. So during your voyage, you set off to climb Mount Vincent in Antarctica, and you attempted that in 2004 and couldn't make it. And I guess that's the last of your seven peaks. You're now headed southward, and you're going to go to Haiti and take some school materials to the poor communities in Haiti, and then perhaps sail down to the south end of the world and try to climb Mount Vincent. Where do you see all of this ending? Are you getting ready to retire from your sailing adventure at some point, or do you just want to continue and sort of go forever?
You know, to be just a single adventure, I would be able to give you an answer on this question. But I became a father of five children, and as you know, we used the Swiss Army knife to give birth on the way to all these children.
Yeah, the Swiss Army knife, they're your sponsors, and you've used it to cut the umbilical cord. Yeah, that's fabulous.
Saying that, it's also depending, you know, what they like to do, because we are kind of a democracy in our family, so everybody has a voice. But I'm really pleased to see now the children to take over, that they really like to follow our footsteps. And at the moment, it looks more that we may end up like maybe the Cousteaus, you know. So Cousteaus children, they are also quite strong, saving the planet. And at the moment, it looks like that our children follow in our footsteps will be great. But and so when we climbed Mount Vincent, our last stop, I can tell you, I will probably never do top to top again like I have set it up this time to climb the highest peak on the planet, because what I found out on this trip is the atmosphere on these mountains are kind of weird, you know. You have nowadays a lot of people climbing Denali or Everest or Aconcagua and so on. They just like to kick off the mountain. And they're absolutely not interested about the environment or the culture and so on. When I would do it again, I would go for the most beautiful mountain in each continent, and that would make much more sense to me. That may be next coming.
Yes.
Let's see. But I think otherwise, when we have a chance to be in Cordova, what's also open now, because we have Swiss passports, and I'm not sure if we can get a green card, So, but when that's the path God likes us to have, then I really like to see that top to top continues, means that younger folks take over, and that this boat goes many times more around the globe, from really to explore the top practice examples to save the planet, the beauty of our planet, to inspire as many young people as possible to act for the future.
Wonderful. Perfect. Well, thank you, Dario. It's been a fascinating interview, and I was so pleased to meet you. We're now going to hear the second part of Dario Schwerer's lecture that he gave here in Anchorage in December, and on his amazing voyage here on Outdoor Explorer.
Now, let's go once to Everest. So we sailed to Calcutta and then cycled from Calcutta and climbed all the way up from the ocean to Everest Base Camp. Noe was with 5 months, probably the youngest. And that actually, Sabine should be here and been invited by the explorers. She was, you know, a mother carrying the baby all the way up there. So we were cleaning Everest for 4 months and surrounding mountains. I hope when you go climbing Everest, you don't leave the tent, the broken tent behind after this storm. These are our commercial expeditions, they just left. And we actually financed our cleanups up there with bringing dead bodies down from the summit area. Now, from Everest, we cycled through whole China, to whole Tibet and China, and were then invited by the World Expo in Shanghai. And from there, we made it then further back to the boat, to Africa. So I could tell stories now for hours. And we attended then at the climate conference. And let's go once back to South America and then to where we started in Galapagos. So we were anchoring at the same spot 9 years later, you know, and there was a seal barking around the boat, and when we went ashore, it was Hans. So 9 years later, so you can always come back to your friends. Now, we never have had issues with pirates and so on. I really like to stress that what you see on TV in the news, that's not the real world. You have to go and explore. And you will find out there's so many good people out there, and it's just not fair when you blame them in other countries. So here in this balls here, that's our oranges and lemons wrapped in alloy foil like that. You can keep them for about 6 to 8 months. Water, we need about 1 gallon of water for our garden, for washing, for drinking, as maybe you can measure also once at home how much you use. When we sailed up to Alaska, then we just put more clothes on, and we were measuring here between Hawaii and the Aleutians. We took water samples to measure then the radioactivity coming out of Japan, what's a good indicator for ocean currents. And then we ended up in Homer first, huh? Where we met you, and we have had a party together and with the Kilchner family. And then finally in Cordova, where we overwintered. We had to learn to catch salmon, picking berries, and Alaska and the Cordova really became our home in a way. And we hope that we can settle once in Cordova when that works out. We got moose and we made it then over the winter. And in spring, they didn't let us cycle to the tunnel in Whittier. So we had to hike over the pass and cycle then over the frozen lake there, Portage Lake. They just said you're not allowed to bike to. Yeah. So, and then we cycled to Talkeetna, and on the way we were hosted by Arena in Anchorage, and we made it as far as Bakersville, and from there we hiked in, and nobody could tell us how to go, because we were the first coming from the ocean without motor to the top of Denali. And the hardest part was not up here. I think base camp is somewhere here where the climbers fly in. The hardest part was really going to the alders. And I really encourage you to go to the website once and see the film, how we did it. When we came out then from the top, we used pack rafts to float to the ocean. And then that's insulating the boat. And then our sails were gone. So we followed the whales, did research on the whale, like here in Juneau, help volunteering, research on humpbacks on the way to San Francisco. And while our sails were done, we were cycling 5 months in the entire US. And the kids made it also, all the family, up to Mount Whitney. Yeah. We cycled there and we did it in one day, overnight. We made it from the coldest place probably on this continent, Denali, to the lowest and warmest Dead Valley without using a motor. Our kids are always involved, so Noah and Allegra has to prepare now a surface here for our second home and our tent. And we have seen really a lot of children. You can imagine when you have one tent, you don't need a heater when you are now 7 people. And that was our Christmas party. And then we were preparing for the Northwest Passage. And just when we were finished, we had a goodbye party in San Diego. We had had all our food. And I was playing soccer. And I ruptured my Achilles. And the idea was to be first doing a figure eight, using the ocean currents and winds most efficiently around the two Americas, and try again Mount Winson, our last stop. Now, I had to go back to Switzerland to operate, and they didn't took off my bandage. And I was in hospital about 5 months. I had 5 operations, and I nearly lost my leg. And you can imagine, for somebody who lives 16 years outdoors, the income of my family are my legs as a guide. So that was kind of hardship. And we lost our sponsor, SGS, because there was somebody coming in. He didn't like that we talk about climate change. And now we have half of the budget left. So when somebody has an idea, you know, and can connect us, that would be really helpful. At the moment, we're really looking that our expedition can continue. The guy who gave us a loan, he got retired, and he told me also this year that he needs the money back. So thanks to Victorinox, we solved that, so we don't have to sell the boat end of this year. And then we entered the Northwest Passage. A guy from Seward sent us some survival suits, and Mia, the newborn, with 7 months, was probably the youngest ever, I guess, during the Northwest Passage. There was not much ice. We were kind of blocked in the first place in Barrow, so we could go to Barrow about 2 weeks later than normal. We took also water samples to measure the microplastic, even already in the Northwest Passage. And when we were in Fort Ross, there we went then up to check the Lancaster Sound, and we were always pushed back, you know. And we have to sail, you know, we need good wind. And so finally we thought, okay, let's give it a try. And I didn't thought that we can manage, because there were only 2 icebreakers that made it through in the past to Fern and Hakla Strait. And we thought, okay, let's just try. And we went south. And on the way, that was actually after Cape Barrow, this polar bear was 50 nautical miles offshore looking for ice. And we made it then as the first boat ever to Fern Hakla into Hudson Bay. The charts were not very accurate there. And you see here the satellite picture. So this is actually the opening. You can hardly see it. It's very small. That's always ice blocked here. And we were just lucky that we were able to come through here. But it was really a struggle. You have 12 knots of current here. It's not very well charted. And there was a lot of ice here. Now, the kids were busy with pushing ice away. And then when we came into Hudson Strait, we were faced with this huge icebergs coming from Greenland. And on one place we saw 11 polar bears in Cunningham Bay. They cannot hunt seals anymore, so they go now for belugas there. That's not normally when we entered Fearn-Hackler Strait, and then it became dark in September already. And so that was not very easy to go through there. We saw about 1,200 students in this Inuit village, in the Inuit villages we have been. They're outstanding people. We really have now a lot of friends up there, and we like to connect these people now with students further south. It's really hard for them. Freezing is about 1 month later, breakup about 1 month earlier in some places, and the suicide rate by students is in some places up by 25%. And the reason why, or one of the reasons for sure also, but they don't see hope, they lose their existence, you know, they need ice to hunt. The caribou population in northern Labrador went down from 800 species to 9,500. So when we saw this picture, you know, we thought, oh, now we have to stop them. Dolphins are our friends, you know, they're always playing in front of the boat. But we learned, you know, that they actually, this dolphin feeds four families, and we cannot blame them. They need to close the gap. They need some food, you know, and they don't produce global warming, you know. So maybe we should change first before we start blaming Inuits when they take once a whale or a dolphin. So I hope with my presentation that I have had an impact on you, that we can save the polar bears, but also these wonderful people in the Arctic. And we have had the same problem at the end, like in the beginning. We didn't have had an autopilot from Hawaii till Newfoundland. The Raymarine part didn't work, so we got then a new Raymarine sent us a new part, but we were helming all the way. And we were so happy then after Newfoundland when it worked again. So that's our story, and I really like to invite you, go once to the website, go under expedition, there are some films, and when somebody has an idea of getting a sponsor, or what would be really a honor for us to have the flag now, the Explorer flag, going as a first around the two Americas and complete with the Explorer's flag at Mount Vinson in Antarctica. Our vision is that our expedition continues, that younger folks take over, that the boat goes many times more around the boat to explore good examples, to inspire young people to act for our planet. And so thank you very much.
That was Dario Schwerer. He has been sailing around the world, and his expedition is called Top to Top. He was speaking in December at the Explorers Club here in Anchorage, and we thank them for letting us come to record. Well, you can learn more about Dario's expedition through our website at outdoorexplorer.org. Just click on today's show, and there's lots of material on their website and an opportunity to support them. Well, that's all for today's show. Our producer is Eric Bork. Assistant producer is Hannah Doro. My name is Charles Wolforth. I'll see you outside.
Outdoor Explorer is a production of KSKA Public Radio in Anchorage, Alaska. Theme music is by Portugal, The Man. Views expressed are those of the participants and do not reflect the station or its underwriters. You can find Outdoor Explorer on Facebook and on iTunes. To see what's coming up on Outdoor Explorer and add your voice to the conversation, go to our website at alaskapublic.org.
Life Informed. This is Alaska Public Media.